This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. During the peak of the United States war in Afghanistan, President George W. Bush and military officials touted our success at bringing Afghans back to their feet through the building of schools. It was a noble-sounding goal. If young Afghans were able to receive education, it would undermine the Taliban and win over the hearts and minds of Afghan people to the American occupiers. Except that today Afghanistan has plunged back into violence, and no one's really talking about the schools. Now, an analysis released by the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction has found that over a period of 12 years, the United States State and Defense Departments and USAID spent nearly $760 million on schools in Afghanistan, but no one adequately tracked how this money was spent or whether it has made any long-term difference. Well, it's a familiar story. U.S. tax dollars are routinely spent on military-related expenses that are unnecessary or destructive, that serve neither the goals of war nor peace. My guest is William Hartung. He's the director of the Arms and Security Project at the Center for International Policy and a senior advisor to the Security Assistance Monitor. And he recently wrote an op-ed in the LA Times entitled, How Not to Audit the Pentagon. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. So I want to talk about the broader issues about military expenditures, but first let's talk about this story of the Afghanistan schools. Of course, this was definitely a military PR project during the height of the Afghanistan war that we were going to be building, that the military was going to be involved in building schools, that USAID and the State Department and the Defense Department were going to help educate young Afghans as an antidote, if you will, to Taliban fundamentalism. And it made for great headlines. But of course, they were not tracking how this money was spent. Does this surprise you in the least bit that what the money was being spent on and whether it would actually have the right outcome wasn't being tracked?
Unfortunately not. There's been such a history of failed projects in Afghanistan. Not just whether they tracked whether the education money was educating people, but whether structures were actually finished, whether highways were built. Pretty much every major project in Afghanistan had some sort of trouble. On the security side, there were ghost soldiers being paid who didn't actually exist, and the money was being pocketed by officials. So unfortunately, it's part of a pattern which has gone on throughout the U.S. involvement in Afghanistan.
And the issue of schools in particular, say when you have a foundation or any nonprofit that wants to build a school in a place like Afghanistan, or frankly anywhere, it's crucial to have measurable outcomes. It's crucial to be able to show donors or foundations or basically account for the money that's spent, how that project impacted the community for which it was intended. How is it that those basic standards are not, you know, that the U.S. government isn't holding itself to those basic standards?
Well, it's, you know, I don't think there's any excuse for it. I think there's was sort of this just general idea that they were going to throw money at the problem of Afghanistan and they were going to get the results they wanted. But it didn't work on the military level. It didn't work on the reconstruction level. And only when they created this Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction were some of the problems brought to the surface. But unfortunately, a lot of times that's after the fact.
So the money came from, the majority of the money came from USAID, some of it from the State Department, some of it from the Defense Department. These are three different agencies, if you will, in the government, three different parts of the government. Don't they have their own accounting processes, or is it just that there's just all this tax money that falls into their laps that they feel they have the impunity to do with that as they please?
Well, to start with, there was no coordination among the three agencies as to strategy, so that was a big problem. But then in terms of their internal accounting, the Pentagon, for example, is the only government agency that can't pass an audit. So they don't know how many people they've employed, how many contractors they're hiring, where some of their equipment is located. So they're basically an incident of waste, fraud, and abuse waiting to happen, and it happens very often. AID has been a little better, but they've had many scandals in their projects as well. So there's been a pattern over the years of actually reducing the number of people overseeing these projects. And a lot of times when they hire contractors, the contractors hire people from the government who would have otherwise been overseeing the project. So they lose expertise of people who know how to monitor these things. And then they have these cozy relationships between the people doing the work as contractors and their former employers and government. So there's kind of a inside influence aspect to it also.
Now, you mentioned that the Pentagon is the only agency that can't pass an audit. What does that mean? Like, has anyone ever tried to audit the Pentagon and failed?
Yes, they've failed repeatedly. Most recently, the Marines claimed they had passed an audit, and they had an outside accountant who carried that out. But it ends up that the outside accountant was friendly with somebody in the Marines and overlooked some problems. And when the Government Accountability Office looked at it, they said actually there was a lot of missing money that hadn't been accounted for, that in fact this audit was not a decent audit. And this was even though then Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel had a big press conference announcing that they had passed an audit, almost a, you know, a celebration of that fact. When they looked a little closer, it ends up, in fact, they had not passed the audit, and it was the same old sloppy bookkeeping.
And of course, they're spending U.S. tax dollars to actually conduct audits.
Yes, and they've wasted an amazing $6 billion trying to fix the problem on computer systems that haven't worked, data processing.
They've spent $6 billion with a B, dollars, on trying to audit the Pentagon and failed.
Exactly. Primarily technology expenditures. Going back, they were required to be able to pass an audit in 1990. So it's been 25, 26 years that they've been in violation of the law. So over that time period, they've spent that kind of money to no good effect.
In your op-ed in the LA Times, How Not to Audit the Pentagon, you threw out some examples of wasteful expenditures. And over the years, we've heard about such things. You know, we've heard about toilet seats costing hundreds of dollars. But tell us about some of the more egregious examples of expenditures of taxpayers' money, that's my money and your money, and the money of our audience, that has gone towards projects that have ended up nowhere, that have just been, you know, there's just been no justification for expending that money.
Sure. Well,
in addition to Afghanistan schools, by the way, that's arguable whether it's had an impact. I guess the problem with that issue is that they haven't measured it. But yes, ones where it's clear that they haven't had an impact.
Sure. Well, in recent years, they've done things like they spent $8,000 for helicopter gears worth $500. They've got billions of dollars of ammunition that's no longer usable. Either it was never usable or it's expired. They're going to have to spend $1 billion just to destroy all that. They have this air surveillance balloon that broke loose from its moorings and knocked out electricity to 35,000 people in Pennsylvania before crashing.
Right, the air surveillance balloon, by the way, how much did that cost?
Well, the program was $2.7 billion, most of which has been spent, and it was for about 10 balloons. And now they're talking about canceling the program because they were so embarrassed about this incident where it broke free and was flying over Pennsylvania. They had to scramble fighter planes to possibly shoot it down so it wouldn't interfere with commercial aircraft. And some of the members from Maryland who originally had supported it said, well, actually, this might be a danger to my constituents. And they, too, came out against it. So it's gotten so bad that even Mac Thornberry, the Republican in House Armed Services, is now talking about maybe it's time to end the program.
So let's talk about Republicans, because it's the standard Republican concern about big government being far too bureaucratic, having far too much money in red tape and, you know, unaccountability. Do the Republicans as a whole talk about the Pentagon's lack of accountability and big government when it comes to military expenses? Because it seems as though that should be an area, given how much tax of our tax dollars are disproportionately spent on the military, that Republicans ought to be really concerned about. Are they as a whole?
Well, the members who have the most power over it, like Representative Thornberry or the people on defense appropriations, seem to be the least concerned. They just want to keep the money flowing. And in fact, they've spent money this year on things the Pentagon hasn't even asked for. But you've got a libertarian streak and some Tea Party members who want to keep a cap on Pentagon spending, who have supported things like an audit of the Pentagon and more financial incentives for the Pentagon to actually finally pass an audit. And that's an odd set of bedfellows, includes everybody ranging from Bernie Sanders on the left to Ted Cruz on the right, and people like Rand Paul mixed in, and Joe Manchin from West Virginia, sort of moderate to conservative Democrats. So there are some in Congress who are concerned about this, but so far they've been in the minority and they haven't had a lot of leverage to really bring about change in these areas. But I think it's a growing concern in the Congress, even among some hawks like John McCain, who, of course, he wants to spend the money ways we would not be happy with, which is just making a better war machine. But even he is pulling his hair out about how terribly these companies are spending taxpayer money.
Right. And I think it's important to bring up the sort of McCain perspective on this. For somebody who is an ardent war hawk, this should also sort of shock them and upset them, that if your goal is to just fight wars, you know, very aggressively, even that destructive project is not being accomplished. What about, you know, so if we're looking at it as a whole, does it even matter, for example, who's president, whether you have a war hawk like George W. Bush or a liberal like President Obama, who pretends to be reluctant on war, but of course expands the drone war? Does it matter who's president if in the end the project is to simply spend military money and not really even fight wars in the most financially efficient way possible?
Well, I think you've put your finger on something. I mean, a lot of the contractors and the bureaucrats through the Pentagon is just a big cash machine. And so
our cash. I mean, this just makes me, like, we have to keep reminding ourselves, this is our cash, your, mine, the audience's cash.
We're the ones inside the machine giving them the cash, yes. And they're taking it out at a rapid rate. I think, you know, sometimes there are differences. I mean, Bush went in so heavily in Iraq with hundreds of thousands of troops and hundreds of thousands of contractors and so forth. He certainly spent more than Obama, but not by a huge margin, because under Obama, they've used the war budget to pay for various pet projects of the Pentagon that have nothing to do with fighting war. So there's this kind of, I'd say there's a floor under Pentagon spending that comes from just this kind of waste and cronyism that's very hard for any president to get below. And then unless you really have a major troop commitment, the spending stays fairly steady. And in fact, Obama is spending more than the average under Ronald Reagan. So that's a disturbing thought right there.
Even adjusted for inflation?
Yes, adjusted for inflation.
Hmm. And so then how much role do these defense-related corporations that make defense-related materials, products, provide services, et cetera, how much role do they play in ensuring that the spigot of tax dollars keeps flowing? You know, can you tell us about, say, the role of the lobbyists for this industry, ensuring that Congress keeps the money being thrown at the Defense Department? In some cases, money that the Defense Department or Pentagon hasn't even asked for.
Sure. Well, in any given year, the defense industry has between 800 and 1,000 lobbyists on Capitol Hill. So in some years, almost two for every member of Congress. And most of them have come from government. They've been staffers on the Hill, they've worked in the Pentagon, and therefore they know where to go, they know how to get a hearing for what they're pressing on behalf of their companies.
So they're making full use of the revolving door between government and corporate world.
And some of them get appointed to special commissions that research things like what's the future of stealth technology, and they will put people from Northrop Grumman there, which is makes huge amounts of money from stealth technology, and they'll tell them, lo and behold, you need the kind of thing that we're making. So even the determination of what's needed is corrupted in many cases.
In your article, you point out how the U.S. government historically literally underwrote mergers between some of these defense contractors, claiming that the bigger companies would be able to produce products and sell them to the government and taxpayers at lower cost. Tell us that story and what actually happened.
Well, in the 90s, as the Cold War wound down, there was a push partly from the Clinton administration to merge some of the big companies. So Lockheed and Martin Marietta became one company, Lockheed Martin, Northrop and Grumman merged, Boeing bought McDonnell Douglas. And yes, the theory that they put forward was, well, you know, we'll consolidate, we'll get rid of overhead, and we will pass those savings along to the government. But there's no evidence of any weapon system ever having gotten cheaper because of these mergers. And in fact, now you've got these huge companies, which have very little competition, have more leverage over the government than they did even in the 90s. And so therefore, it's much harder, for example, when Lockheed Martin makes F-35s, which is going to be the only fighter plane built by the U.S. government, when they make a mistake, at a certain point, the government has nowhere to turn. And so they just have to eat those cost overruns. So it was sort of a trick pulled over on the taxpayers. And a few people fought back. Bernie Sanders, as a representative, clawed back some of the subsidies that would have otherwise gone to actually executives for their golden parachutes that happened as part of these mergers. But on the whole, the process went forward, and nobody's really been held to account for what was one of the biggest blunders probably in the history of the defense industry.
And of course, in the meantime, we're constantly being told that there isn't any money for, you know, upgrading the water system in Flint, Michigan. There isn't enough money for our public schools. There isn't enough money for our public universities. And it just is never enough money, our money, to fund the things that we need, right? Isn't this then finally that big context that we have to keep reminding ourselves that our own tax dollars are being funneled to the military for wasteful projects, and the tax dollars of the rich and wealthy are hid offshore in offshore tax havens, and in the end we're just told there's no money to fund the things that we need.
Exactly. If you take those two together, the waste of hundreds of billions and trillions over the years on the Pentagon and the failure to tax the wealthiest Americans, that's why there's no money to fix the water in Flint or improve our education system or do a real job of protecting the environment or building decent public transit. So, I think it's hard to weigh the balance, but I think progress would have to be made on both of those fronts. You have to steal back some of that money, not steal it back, but take back some of that money from the Pentagon that it's wasting, and you'd have to make everybody pay their fair share, which is certainly not the case now. But I think it would take both of that, more revenues and a more effective and less costly defense posture.
Well, Bill, I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us and helping us, you know, get angry about where our tax dollars are going and aren't going. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
My guest is William Hartung, Director of the Arms and Security Project at the Center for International Policy. He's a senior advisor to the Security Assistance Monitor, and his op-ed in the LA Times is entitled How Not to Audit the Pentagon. We'll post a link to it from our website. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter, and find our interviews on iTunes and Vimeo.